Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Samach. And yesterday we got up to the two dots, and we were in the middle of discussing what the din would be, l'gabi a Kohen Gadol, who took the first chelek, the b'raisa was a Kohen Gadol, who took his own rape victim, or his own mifuta. And today we want to continue at the two dots, seven lines down, Anusat chaveiro, mufutat chaveiro lo yisa. So the next thing we had in the Mishnah, in the Braita rather, was discussing what the din would be if the Kohen marries another person's anusa umufuta. Obviously over there, that is exactly what the Torah asserted. But what's the din if he is nose? So Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov omer havlad chalal. The child is a chalal from that marriage. And the Chachomim say the Vlad is kasher. Now, this is very fascinating because if we take a look at the Pasuk, we can see where the problem is. The Pasuk says, Almana, Grusha, V'chalala, Zona. This is all in reference to a Kohen Gadol. So besides the Yisra and a Kohen Hedyot, there's an additional idea of the Almana. So an Almana is only for a Kohen Gadol. Four cases are listed here. Almana, Grusha, Chalala, Zona, et Eila lo yikach, ki im betula mi'amav yikach isha, v'lo yechalel zar'o be'amav. Now, the question, of course, is lo yechalel zar'o be'amav a reference to a child born from any of the above cases? Is there five cases above? Remember, there's Almana, there's Grusha, there's Chalala, there's Zona, and there's a Be'ula, a non-betula. This is all in terms of the Kohen Gadol. And afterwards it says, Lo Yechalel Zaro. So the question is, I mean, normally we always understand that the nature of Chalalut is a child that is born from an illegitimate union of the Kohuna, which is a lav. I mean, the fact that it's a assay, it's not so poshut that just not taking a bitulah would create Chalalut. So we find here a machloket. So first, we want to have another take on this, because it seems outrageous that it's possible to create chalalut in a child just from not taking a betula. So first of all, Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav, Halachak Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, we paskin like that the Vlad is a halal in this case, and what's the logic behind it? Chein Amar Rav Gidol Amar Rav, Halachak Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, and some say that actually, Rav Huna Amar Rav explained the logic. Ikeni Amrei, Om Rav Huna Amar Rav, my time at Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. He wasn't talking about the halacha. He was coming to explain the svara. Why does Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov say that the child is a halal? Because he holds like the shita of Rabbi Elazar. This is the shita of Rabbi Elazar. So we saw already the tremendous chiddush of Rabbi Elazar that we've spoken about is that according to Rabbi Elazar, casual sex is nus. The tremendous chiddush. Nobody else holds that. And so if you say that casual sex is dus, then it would mean that when the Torah says not to marry a zonah, and that would be the lotasa, that would be, unbelievably, anyone who had casual sex. So if that's the case, then in this situation, where he took a woman that was asura to him, forget about whether there's a lav, and that's not the issue. This was a Znus. And since it was a znus, she became a zonah. That first time that he had sex with her, she became a zonah, whether it was a rape or whether it was, remember, we're talking about kohanim over here. So we're talking about, therefore, whether it was pitui, it was a seduction, whatever it was. She became a zonah. So now, if he indeed impregnates her as a zonah, the child is a halal, like any of the other, because the zonah is one of the first of the four, Almana, Grusha, V'chalala, Zonah. Okay, so that explains it all. Once you're ready to say that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov holds like the sheet of Rabbi Elazar, so now we understand. Yes, as the Gemara, sure, now we understand, except that that's not possible. Umi sova l'kavate? We know for a fact that actually Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov does not hold of Rabbi Elazar. And the way that we know that is because if he did, there would be a contradiction in the Psak Halacha. Remember that our Kaimalan, we have a fast rule. And that rule is that the Mishnah to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Kav Vinaki. Everything that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says in the Mishnah, we pasken like him. He doesn't say very much. It's Kav, it's only a little bit. But everything that he says is perfect. So we pasken like him. All right, so then that would mean that the halacha, if his din is based on Rabbi Elazar, that znus is just any, even a panuy and a pnuya, even two unmarried people, just having casual relations. The problem is that Beha, in the question of Rabbi Elazar, who said, was talking about this idea of a zonah, Rav Amram said, beferish, that ein halacha, k'Rabbi Elazar. So what we said is over there, is that halacha is not like Rabbi Elazar. We can't have it both ways. If the entire idea of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is based upon Rabbi Elazar, and the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, then how in the world could we have said that the halacha is not like Rabbi Elazar when it comes to the issue of znut? Kasha. Okay, that's a problem. So we're going to have to find a better solution to what the logic is in the psak over here, and why it is that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is saying that the child is a halal, despite the fact that there's no lotase, because if there's no zona, then there's no lotase. So there's a very straightforward pshat. Rav Ashi says, look, why don't we just bite the bullet and say that the pshat is what it's proclaiming itself to be? I mean, basically, isn't the issue over here of how to understand that pasuk? So, I mean, what Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is saying over here is that the fact that there was an Isra on the Kohen Gadol only as an Isra Aseh is enough to create a halal. That's all. And that's the machlokas. B'yesh halal mechavei Aseh kamifagei. We're arguing about whether, in fact, one makes a halal from an illegitimate union that was only a problem of an Aseh and not a lotaseh. So clearly, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Savar, yesh chalal mechai ve'aseh. The Rabbanan Savrei, ein chalal mechai ve'aseh. And everything takes its place. Now it's obvious what Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov was referring to as his source text over here, because we just analyzed it ourselves. We're in trouble. We just analyzed it ourselves. Here I was so happy. Looks like we're going to actually get some learning done today. So, Rabbi Eliezer, we analyzed this pasuk ourselves. We had four cases which were lotases, followed by one case which was an aseh, and then the pasuk says v'lo yechal el zaro, right? So the total of five cases. One of those cases was the fact that isha bibituleha. He's not allowed to take a bula, but that's an aseh. And that, in fact, is the issue. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, look at the pasuk. Almana, grusha, chalala, zona. That's four cases. Et elo lo yikach. Ki im bitula be'amav. Fine. Okay. So then we include five cases. And then the pasuk says, v'lo yechal el zaro. It means any one of the five cases, including akulu, all of the cases mentioned above, a Kohen Gadol who marries a woman who is not a bitula, and he impregnates her, the child is a halal. That's all. That's what it says in the pasuk, says Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Yeah, well, that's pretty good. So how does Rabbanan come off arguing with Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov? Doesn't it say this beferish in the pasuk? Say the chachamim, well, you're not reading the pasuk very carefully, are you? I mean, the pasuk is parsed into two separate sets, right? It says the first, it talks about the almana, the grusha, the chalala, zona, and it summarizes, et ele lo yikach. Then it goes on to say, ki im betula, it's supposed to be taken betula. And then after all of that, we have v'lo yechal el. Now, if in fact what we've been talking about over here was really and truly a set of things that create halalut, what in the world is that thing in the middle doing there at eila lo? Don't take these. We don't take these. Don't take any of them. I mean, you're splitting up the pasuk between the first four, which are lavim, and the last one of the betulah, which is an aseh. I mean, there's got to be a reason for splitting it up, and the reason suggests itself. Lo yechalel is a din in the lav, and not in the aseh. That's what we say the chachamim, and that's the pshat, that we do not agree with them. Eila, that word, eila lo yikach, that breaks it up, doesn't it? Hivsikainya, that breaks up the pasuk. So now we have two sets, one of a lotaseh, one of an aseh, and of course, if it says lo yichalel zaro, and the pasuk is announcing not all of the above, so then of course it's more logical that we'll apply the lo yichalel to the set of four, which are the lotases, and not to the one about the aseh. So, yeah, that's a very good point, actually, Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov. So why now does Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov feel that that's not an important distinction between the Yisrael Lav and the Yisrael Yaseh? Therefore, only the Yisrael Lav should be able to produce Chalalut. Says Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov, wait a minute, the Eile is there for a very important reason, not to be a hefsek between one part of the list and the next part. It's there to teach me something. It's not just a comma, so to speak, in a set. It's an important limud. What is that important limud? It's to tell me that even though one of the arayot is a nida, right? However, if he actually ends up sleeping with a nida, which is an iser kores, and impregnates her, the child is not a chalal. Now that's a tremendous chiddush. Okay, and basically that's far more fundamental a point to list than to say it's just a comma to tell me that there are two separate sets here. So kemanos lahadatanya. Now we know that there's a braita that says, and look how it's focusing on that word eila. From may eila, that's the eila we're talking about. May eila atal sechalal. You make a halal through actually creating a child with these four women, or whatever they are, the Eila. But iata oseh halal mi nida, but not from a nida. Okay, now that braita clearly is focusing on Eila, and it's telling me that the meaning of Eila is to exclude a child born of a nida. Who's it going like? Now we understand very clearly. It's going like Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov. Now there remains only one question. If, in fact, Eilem is not a comma, and it's there in order to differentiate between nidos, which is a different type of erva that does not prevent marriage. There's no problem in marrying a nida as long as you don't sleep with her. And that's why, in fact, a child born from a nida is not considered to be a pogum in the way that the mamzeris or halolos, that's a nida, is not nogea. These halachas. So, according to that, why does it also appear as a comma? I mean, wouldn't it make more sense to list all of the five cases, the Yamanah, the Grusha, the Chalala, and the Zonah, and the Be'ula, the Non-Betula, and then say, et Eila lo yikar, all of the above. I mean, the placement is different than the content. So, from the content, you're right, I can learn out that Anida does not create Chalalut. But from the placement, I should also be able to learn out what the Chachamim are telling us. That the fact is that an Isra Aseh does not create a Halal Kasha. That's a problem. I mean, that definitely is a problem. It's still obviously understandable because the fact is that the first four cases, which are listing Lota Aseh, are much more suitable to use as a model for the antithesis, namely the Nida, which is a Lotas, and all of a sudden to switch to the Dinim of an Aseh, and then to say it Eila as opposed to the Nida. I mean, you can understand why it would make sense this way. So it's not a devastating problem. Okay, now, we have a fascinating other location. We've been talking about, the past few days, we've been talking about the interrelationship between genitals and sexuality. And we've seen that there's all kinds of machlokas in about how it is that we view the issue of pristinity or betulot in terms of genitals versus in terms of sexuality. And that was nogea b'yashalokit darka, and so on and so forth. It was nogea mukas eitz, even the old broomstick problem. And we also examined the same issue about the genital question legabe apitzua daka, and that showed us that the Torah most definitely is very interested in genitals, qua genitals. And that's very important. That's rather obvious, isn't it? If the whole bris that we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is genital and it has nothing to do with directly sexual, so then it's clear that the Torah views the problem of genitals and their shape and so on and so forth as being fundamental to the relationship of a human being to the earth as a whole, and purely outside of anything that has to do with its sexual functionality. So now we really need to look into the places where the Torah is makbid on this issue of betula. Is it always the same? Because we saw that we had a machlokas over here, legabe, the marriage of a Kohen Gadol to a betula. So we had a number of things that were pretty shocking to us, that the Torah, perhaps, I mean, we had a machlokas, but it's possible that a woman who is already an old lady of 12 and a half years old is not considered to be a betula. Why not? Well, because her body is already not in its original pristine state. It's not bituleha. This is not what she was originally endowed with. So we use that word. Oh, she's heavily endowed, right? So we use that word as a sort of cynical word, legabe sexual content. But the fact is, it's a real meaning, because that's what bituleha surprisingly means. What are the betulim with which she was endowed? That means initially. So now if she no longer has those betulim, so then it's possible that the Kohen is not allowed to marry her. That's a tremendous extension of the idea of betula, right? And there are other places where defining the nature of betula is critical to the whole halacha. Remember, what is the din about a Kohen? Is he allowed to go to a funeral of a relative? There are seven relatives that he is allowed to be. In fact, Mechuyev, if he's not a Kohen Gadol, is Mechuyev to be Metameh himself. And that is the mocker of the Din of Avelus all over. So, one of those is Achoto Habitula Asher Lo Hayta Laish. So there we go again, in the context of the Kohuna, this time not in the Kohuna Gedola, just the Kohuna. If somebody asked you, you wouldn't have thought of that. Somebody would have asked you, where do I need to know the difference between a betula and a bula? Your first reaction would have been, well, it's only nogea Kohen Gadol, right? But that's not true. It's nogea every single Kohen. Because if his sister is not a betula, so then it seems to be saying that, well, that would mean if she's 12 and a half years old, he can't go to her funeral. I mean, does it mean that there as well? Because remember, we have two different words. One was bivetuleha, and one was bitula. Over here, we have the din of habitula. Now, there's other places which is nogea everybody. For instance, the question of the dinim of a na'ara, hama'urasa. What is the dinim over there? What do you pay kumohar habitulot? Questions of rape, and what is owed for the rape of a betula? These are all questions that are nogea very much halacha. Each and every one of them takes for granted that we know what the Torah is referring to when it says betula, but now we understand that that's actually quite complicated, and we don't know. So let's take a look at the next braita, which talks about the dinim of avelut, terms of the kuhuna. Tana Rabbana, achoto arusa. We start off with the same question we always had. Erisin. Now, erisin so far we only looked at as the question of mishtameret lebiya psula. And therefore we said, okay, so it's possible the erisin itself to someone who is usher to her would itself create a pasulut. That was the machlokas, the original machlokas at the beginning of this whole series that we started talking about, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon versus Rabbi Meir, is a mishtameret lebiya psula considered to be automatically pasul, and that led to the question of what about if we knock off the guy who is the one that is making your mishtamer to be a psula, if he dies, so then that takes off his kinyanim, and therefore we don't have any pagam of the mishtameret. Now, what about an achoto arusa? So a sister died as an arusa. What's the din? So Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda say the Kohen, who is her brother, actually does go to the funeral. And he's mitameila. Whereas Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon say, no, he can't be mitameila. Now, let's go through all of the cases. If she was actually, she had been raped, and she had been seduced. So even though it says over there, hoyitala ish, which you might think means she didn't marry anybody, that's not the case. Everybody is moda that if she was violated, even though she was raped, it doesn't matter. He cannot go to the funeral. We're going to go through the psukim in a moment, and the Gemara will explain where we get all of this from. And so that's clear. Now, what about the case where she is not a betula? She's a mukat eitz. So here we've got our old broomstick or bicycle problem. So what's the din over there? Ah, now there we have a machlokes. A mukat eitz, a no mitamela, even though she was only physically damaged, right? And there's nothing here that was caused by any male or anything like that. Nonetheless, he's still, according to Rabbi Shimon, he's not mitame. Why not? Because Rabbi Shimon used to insist that the concept of betula is equivalent to the concept of betula that we find by the Kohen Gadol. So, ru'uya le'Kohen Gadol mitameila. She'en ru'uya le'Kohen Gadol eino mitameila. So therefore, this is perfectly consistent with Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yossi Shita. It's a little bit strange that Rabbi Yossi seems to have dropped out. Maybe, I don't know, you know, some of our chavrusas also end up playing Sesame Street or something. What happened to Rabbi Yossi? The Gemara is going to ask this. What happened to Rabbi Yossi? Because until now, he was hanging around with Rabbi Shimon, and you could sort of count on that. Okay, so we'll ask that in a moment. But anyway, it's clear over here. He holds exactly the same thing, and we're going to see how he derives that. And the last case is, of course, the other question. She is an old lady. She's already 12 and a half. So now, can he be metamela or not? So she's a bogeret. Over there, everybody agrees he does go to the funeral. So, okay, where does all this come from? Seems very arbitrary. So my time in the Rebbe Meir Rebbe Yehuda said, even though she is anarusa, she is nonetheless considered to be his sister in terms of avelut, and he goes to the funeral. What is the makor? The Darshei Hachi, they make the drasha like this. It says, Ula achoto apidula. Apidula is coming to tell me, not if she was no longer a bitula, and she had actually gone through a relationship that destroyed her bitulim. Maybe she was raped. Maybe she was seduced. So that is prat lanu samufuta. Now you might think that to be consistent, we should include even the mukat eitz. Talmud Lomar, that's why it stresses over here. A betula shelo hayata le'ish. We're talking about not a betula who is physically or not, a betula or not defined physically. No, we're talking about a betula defined physically in terms of human interference, but not broomsticks and bicycles. And therefore, since it specifies over here, why do I mean when I say a bitula shelo hayta le'ish? I don't really care. In this situation of attending a funeral, which is a completely different context, so I don't really care about whether she's truly a bitula, because, listen, that would introduce amazing new issues, which in fact are going to be introduced here in this sugya. The relationship between a brother and a sister is different in terms of her being a betula or not being a betula. So I understand. If what we're talking about, a sister who is close to you, okay, so you're two kids, you grew up together. Now your sister went out and is involved with a man. Obviously, that makes a tremendous difference. And since the dinim of avelut are connected to that entire psychological process, so it's clear to me that that would make a difference. I mean, now she's not my little sister anymore, you know, so now she's this guy's wife. And that's a whole different relationship in terms of my sense of avelut and her loss. But to say that there would be a difference whether she had a bike accident and she still has a hymen or that, who the heck cares? What is the brother interested in that distinction? And indeed, the Torah comes along and says, no, when I'm talking about this issue, I'm talking about the question of whether the relationship with a man removed these betulim, not whether there are physically betulim. That's not the point. Okay, so then the Torah went out of its way to say, asher lo hayeta, misha havayata, so only a woman where the process of her becoming a non-betula happened through the intervention of a human. There, yes. Yatzazo, but in this case, ein havayata, the process of her becoming a non-virgin had nothing to do with humans. It was not ayadei ish, it was just an accident. So she is still considered to be a virgin in terms of this issue, in terms of attending the funeral. Comes along the pasuk then to add the next word, Hakrova elav. So hakrova means even though she is still an arusakas. What are we talking about hakrova? We're talking about an emotional state? I mean, that's irrelevant. The Torah is not going to tell me the level of your emotional connection. You know, you were close, you weren't close. That's irrelevant to the din of avelut. And we take that for granted. That therefore the idea of hakrova has to be saying, let's expand the envelope a little bit over here so that we can say there is still a sense of a krova. And that sense of krova is that she's still maybe connected to the other person a little bit because she took a ring from him, you know. But again, the guy, the brother is thinking, yeah, but she's still my little sister till this bum gets her, right? So she's still krova elav in that sense. So she's close to him on that level. That includes an arusa. And then when it says hakrova elav, which would mean no matter how it is, that would include a bogeret. So the bogeret, that is a little bit of a problem because as Tosis points out, why do we need a pasuk? We already said that only where there's a change in her betulim that are caused by a man, ashaloi talaish, would there be some problem to a brother because she's an old lady and he's worried about the fact that she no longer has strong enough hymens to put. I mean, look, what in the world is that his business? And so again, Tosfos says, look, I mean, this is a little, why would I have thought, that this would be different than the idea of the Mukas 8? Okay. So Tosfos points out that each one of these Limudim is unique. In other words, I can only learn one next thing up that it's still considered to be. Once the Torah has raised the question, if I need a pasuk to tell me that a Mukas 8, which is an alien kind of thing, right? And Minamukas 8 means she was penetrated by a broomstick or hit herself on a bike or whatever. That's an external cause. So, okay, understand. You identified the external cause. And it's not the external cause, which the Torah says, I don't want, which is a human interference in Ayadei Ish, Ashaloi Tala Ish. But perhaps there is, in fact, a sort of entropy to the family relationship of brother and sister as the sister ages. And the fact is, obviously, as the changes of puberty are taking place, the relationships change profoundly. And because of that, if I don't have a special limud to tell me that the natural process, which of course is kosher to all types of other changes, puberty is not a change just in an organ. Puberty is a complete and total rearrangement of the brain along with a hymen. I mean, it's not unrelated issues. So if I wouldn't have had a special posik to tell me, says Tosfos, that even this case of the bogeret, where there's a change, and there's a change measurable in terms of bitulim, isn't that a remarkable idea? It's an unbelievable idea. So that means we're looking at the concept of bitula to be a measurement of a person's emotional connectedness to the world as well. And as we're going to see, this is profoundly important because it turns out that these emotional changes and the connectedness that a person has to any of these inyonim are remarkably directly connected to sexual functionality. So that there's a tremendous difference between a 3-year-old and a post 3-year-old, even though, in other words, the day before and the day after. Again, that is because the Torah has defined not sexuality, genitals, unbelievably. And that is going to end up, as we're going to see in the pasuk, making all of the difference in terms of the suitability for a woman to be taken into Klal Yisrael and so on. It's mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling. By the way, I just want to point out this is one of the things that people so profoundly overlook in the way that they think about life. They think about life that it's all about the way that they're provided stuff out of a supermarket, so to speak, you know. So I got a brain out of a supermarket, and I got hands out of a supermarket, and genitals out of a supermarket, and this is sort of the way I came wrapped, you know. And fine, you know, if I'm able to use any of these things for mitzvahs, that'd be great, and so on, you know. But basically, I'm an old codger. I don't really need to worry about these things. I've done my mitzvahs, had my grandkids, had my great-grandkids. I don't need to worry about this forever. Okay, so basically, you know, it's time to say goodbye. I say goodbye very happily. Bye-bye. I had a nice time. I said, no, that is totally and absolutely wrong. Because the whole point is, and this, by the way, is part of our this week's parasha. All of these things in this week's parasha. They're amazing. So our this week's parasha. MR issues. Right? So all these MR issues. Talking about going to the funeral of Achotrop. I mean, this is crazy. But the idea over there is the Zohar says there's no more painful thing in the world than the day that the nefesh has to say goodbye to the guf. What's so painful about that? I mean, as long as you had a nice few innings and so on, I mean, you didn't expect to live forever. So what is so painful about that? So the person recognizes the godless of his Olam Haba and his shaykhus of his neshama to Olam Haba, because the whole point is that the incredible opportunity of that connection, it's a real connection. It's not a supermarket thing that you now put in batteries, use as long as you can, lose it and discard it. That's not the point. That's the whole issue of the entire element of Avelut and Tumas Meis and so on and so forth. These are real profound connections. And therefore, it's all part of the Torah's vision. Those connections are connections in which every body part plays a role. And so the things that you think are childish, and okay, this is for kids and so on, who the heck cares? What does somebody my age have to worry about that? That's not true. And you take a look at David HaMelech when he needed to determine the nature of the Malchus to come. He understood. Look how withdrawn he was. And they had to come and get him involved. We need you to make this decision. How does he go to make that decision? Sex. Unbelievable, as the Gemara says. I mean, so there he calls in Bathsheba? Yes, that's the whole point. He can't make that decision for the purpose of Klal Yisrael without the complete attachment that was missing. The same thing is true over here. So if we're talking about the relationship between a brother and your sister, you say, okay, what's the difference to me for heaven's sake? What do you mean? I understand not being married to somebody, of course. Married. No, not true. And I need a special pasuk, as Tosfos says, to include the Bogeret. And that even there, the relationship is sufficiently intact to allow the Kohen to attend the funeral. Ask the Gemara, but wait, don't I know that already from the word Betula? Remember, Alam Alikra, why do I need a pasuk to tell me Bogeret? Didn't Rebbe Meir say that the word Betula means every bit of it, any bit of a Betula? So it would have included a Bogeret. So then over here, that's the word of Betula. No, because I would have said, now that I've already explained what Betula means. So, Salkadaitach Amina. Now, here we have a big machlokas, Rashi and Tosfos. We don't have time to go into the logic of this machlokas. I think that what you have been expecting, because of the way I just presented it, is Tosfos's approach. Namely, that I would have thought that we learnt out Betula from the idea of the Betula of the Kohen Gadol directly. That's not what Rashi learns. And Rashi understands that I would have thought that we should learn out Betula from yet another context. And what was that other context? The din of rape. So it says over there, Ki yimtza ish nara Betula asher lo orasa. And then it talks about he has to pay Chamishim Kesef for the rape and so on and so forth. So I would have thought that we learn out from there, there has to be a Nara. Because, I mean, where else would we get the idea of Nara? It's got to be from there. So you can understand why Rashi says this. So Malalad says, Beferish Nara and not a Bogeret. Here too, when it says a Betula, it's referring to a Nara, not a Bogeret. So I need a person to tell me that that's not true. And that the relationship to the Nara stage, which means that she is not yet 12 and a half years old, that is Dafka said in the context of the story of rape, with the mitzvah of lo tia leisha, tachat asherina, and so on and so forth. Kamashmalan, the Kohen, is allowed to go to the funeral of a sister who was a Bogeret. And Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, why do they say you cannot, as a Kohen, attend such a funeral if she is an arusa alone? Well, they read the pasuk like this. That comes to tell me, just like you said, pratla anusa umefuta, and it also excludes the mukas eitz. Aha. Okay, so this is the way they would read the pasuk then. And that is actually, we found that Rabbi Shimon Shita. It's not really Rabbi Yossi Shita, as we're going to point out. But okay, we put it together here with one drasha. So she's not a betula because she's a mukas eitz. So then when it says asher lo hayeta, it doesn't mean who didn't become a non-betula through having relations with an ish. It just comes to tell me that she is not arusa. Hayeta. Remember the word hayeta means? Havaya. Havaya is erusin. So asher lo hayeta la ish, that means prat la arusa. Then when it says akrova, if we took away the erusin because her husband divorced her before they ever consummated the marriage, so then she died without a husband. So that's good enough. And then Elav, according to them, does in fact include the Bogeret. And then when we have this one additional case, Hakrova, we said that that's coming to include an Arusa Shenitgarsha. Now that was new to us. And this Rabbi Shimon doesn't seem to work out. Rabbi Shimon said only the Betula that is mentioned by a Kohen is considered to be a betula that is mentioned in a funeral. That's what he said at the beginning. So he said, Ru'u yada kohen gadol, only can a normal kohen go to be metame for a funeral. But ein ru'u yada kohen gadol, ein metame la. So then why did Rabbi Shimon agree that a kohen can go to a funeral of a sister who does not have a husband because he divorced her? But they never slept together. She was an arusa. So how is that? That's certainly when we said before that that is not ro'i. Shinei ha'asam de Rabbi Rachman akrova. Okay, we have a special pasuk for that. So then maybe it should include a mukaseitz also. A mukaseitz is also krova. So how come we argue with that? How come he says, yes, you could go to the funeral of a sister who was an arusa because her husband divorced her before they got married, but you cannot go to the funeral of a sister who had a bike accident? Does that make sense? Well, you only have one pasuk. Krova adds one case. I say the more likely case to add is a non-extant kiddushin rather than a change in her status of a betula. Well, why? I mean, Maraita, what makes you say that that is more reasonable than this? Well, I'll tell you. Because the bottom line is that the Mukat Eitz has been involved in an actual change. Now, it's true the change wasn't affected by human. It was affected by an accident. But the fact is, accidents cause changes, okay? And those physical changes are real. Doesn't matter how they got there. And therefore, I would say, someone was this Avi B'Maaseh, that an actual physical change to her body had taken place, is more likely to be not included in the original relationship with her brother. And in this case, where she got involved with this guy and then he divorced her before anything came of it, over there, there was no real change, certainly not to her body. And because of that, in terms of Akrova, how close is she to her brother? I believe that the non-change, the non-physical change, who went through a little bit of a, you know, love story with a guy, and then she realized she's infatuated with him. Okay, big deal. People go through that all the time. I mean, you know, when she was in the fourth grade, she had this big thing for her teacher also, you know, big deal. So it doesn't mean a thing. Okay. Wait a minute. Rabbi Yossi left his chavrusa. How could Rabbi Yossi have left his chavrusa? I mean, Rabbi Yossi made a shavke lebarzuk. I mean, his partner, his beloved partner, Rabbi Shimon. Oh my gosh. All of a sudden he leaves Rabbi Shimon to argue this on his own. And he obviously has dropped out. So apparently he agrees with Rabbi Meir because he didn't follow Rabbi Shimon, who said, no, Mukas Eitz is no good. He must agree with Rabbi Meir that Mukas Eitz actually is good. But then how does he know it? Because he did follow step by step. He followed Rabbi Shimon up till now in all the steps. How come he suddenly dropped out? So he must have another makar. Where is the makar that says that he's allowed to go to the funeral of the Mukas Eitz? No, well, he agrees. You know, asher lo hayta la'ish, like we said, only if the betulim were affected by a person, not if they're affected by a bicycle. But you use that pasuk. What do you mean? You can't do that. Rabbi Yossi agreed with Rabbi Shimon before, and he said the word lo hayata was referring to an arusa. So he can't use it now to say havayata. It's two totally different meanings. What are you talking about? Fikte. No. Wait a minute. There are two different limunim from that pasuk. One is lo hayata. Okay? Lo hayata. If it would just say lo hayata, so then that means to be an arusa, a wedding, havaya. Asher lo hayata. She can go through a wedding of any kind. There was no, that's then. Now, the other one is la'ish. I mean, we certainly didn't think that she was engaged to the pine tree. So, I mean, it would have said Asher lo hayata. So now if it says Asher lo hayata la'ish, that's telling me that there are two different applications. One is the ish who might be causing havayata, and only then is there a change in her status of a betula. And then on the other hand, there's just hayata. Forget about the ish, just the fact that there was a kinyan kedusha. Okay. And then the last thing that we had was a lav that is coming to include a bogeret, a brother is allowed to go to the funeral of his old lady sister of 12 and a half. So he can still go to that funeral. But wait, Rabbi Shimon said that the word, remember back in the Machlokas, the original Machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yossi, I mean, for heaven's sakes, what it was that Rabbi Shimon said over there was that the word betula on its own, forget about all this jazz about bivitula, bitula, what is the word betula? So Rabbi Shimon said the word betula means a total, absolute bitula, not a bogeret, and nothing has affected her. So now how come all of a sudden now the bogeret is now included in the bitula, that the kohen is allowed to go to the levaya, where a moment ago he said when it was talking about who the kohen gadol can marry, that he can't marry a bogeret. I'm so confused. What is he old? That's where he figured this out from. Don't you understand? Time of the day, nami hata miacha. He learned out that din that he said over there with such finality that a betula is everything, right? How do I know that? I knew it from here. The Darish Hachi. He says, since we needed that word, a love, Zakharov a love. So we said, from a love, we need to include a sister who is an old lady of 12 and a half. So she's the bogeret. Why do I need that pasuk? Obviously that the word betula on its own, without that pasuk, the Torah is indicating now that the word betula means absolute betula, no changes, and therefore not including bogeret, unless I tell you otherwise. Exactly. That is precisely why, when I went to argue with Rabbi Meir, I learned from here, I started with the Avelutzad, and I learned from there what it is that a betula means. Then when we got back to the argument about the Kohen Gadol, then I applied that insight that the word betula means betula shlema, unless you're told otherwise. Now, the question is, can a Kohen marry a Gioret, or is she considered to be a Zonah? So there's two issues over here. Generally speaking, when we're talking about society as a whole, there's absolutely no concerns for sexual controls. Everything is just free-for-alls. So in that sense, we should be talking about anyone who was a goy, any woman who was a goy, should now be seen as a zonah, because basically that's what life is in the West. It's all whoredom. So anybody that comes from there is basically you're taking a whore. That's what it boils down to. The question is, what if she wasn't 3 years old yet? So if she wasn't 3 years old, it's hard to be a whore without genitals. And since the Torah defines the genitals as coming into play only at the age of 3, so then, but Pashtus, you would say, okay, so then that's all right, as long as she became a giyaret before the age of 3. That's what you would think. And indeed, Reb Shimon bar Yochai says, yes, that's the halacha. A Gioret who converted when she was Pchuta Mibat Shalosh Anim V'Yom Echad, so before she was Ru'uya L'Bi'a, so she remains Kshera L'Kuhuna, because there was nothing wrong with her at all. So now the question is, I mean, basically we know that it does say, Davka Bitulot Mi Zera Peis Yisrael. This is like a weird pasuk that Yecheskel adds, right? That was one of the steers in Yecheskel, because it says over there that any kohanim, almana, v'grusha, lo yikulam l'nashim, which is a contradiction, as the Gemara points out, contradiction to the halacha. Ki'im betulot mizera beit Yisrael. They're allowed to take only betulot from beit Yisrael. So what exactly does that mean? So Shimon HaYochai says, as long as this female was less than 3 years old, so then she can't be a zona, so she's ksher lekuhuna. And we also find that when we went out to fight, the very girls whose entire duties were to seduce Jewish soldiers. That was the Benos Midian, right? Benos Midian. So they were sent out to mess up the war effort by being very seductive and getting all of the Jewish soldiers into bed. Definitely difficult to fight wars when you're in bed. And therefore, they were actually pursued afterwards by Pinchas and by the army, and then the Moshe Rabbeinu told him, you got to wipe these guys out, these girls out, I should say. So it says over there that after they won the war, it says, V'chol ha'tav banashim asher lo yadu mishkav zachar ha'chayu lachem, that any of these children in the females who had not been involved in sexual relations, you keep for yourselves. Okay, so what do you mean for yourselves? I mean, for yourself seems to be saying you can keep them and marry them if you want. So as long as they were that young. And who is the pasuk talking to? For yourselves. Just for non-Kohanim? No, the instructions were given to Pinchas. Pinchas is a Kohen, and he was told that he can keep one of these girls, says Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. So you see from here that as long as they were less than three, there's no problem. So apparently, as long as she was under the age of three, at the time that she was Midgayeret, there's no problem for Pinchas to marry her. Hey, that's a darn good raya. Why is it that the Rabbanan disagree with this raya? How are they going to explain this? And by the way, the halacha is in fact not like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And the halacha is that any child is asura, even if she was less than 3 years old. So how do they argue on the pasuk? Says the Gemara, you know, you've got a dirty mind. I mean, what does it say over here that you can take for yourself? It says you can take for yourself to take as a wife. Take for yourself means you can keep her as a maid in the house, or sell her as a maid. I don't know, but what makes you think that it means you can marry her? So it means labadim l'shvachot. It doesn't say you're allowed to marry her. Now, let's ask on Rabbi Shimon. If Rabbi Shimon is right, why is the age of three important? Now, suppose we know for a fact that this girl has not had any kind of sexual relationships. And we'll see how we can figure out these things. So, does the age of three make the difference? I mean, where did he get that from? Ah, that's Ravuna. Ravuna pointed out that in the pasuk of Benot Midyan, there seems to be a fundamental contradiction. On the one hand, it says, V'chol isha yodat ish l'mishkav zachar harog. Now, listen carefully to that pasuk. It says over there, every woman, now woman is a word that's usually used for a mature woman, right? Throughout the battle, we keep talking about Nashim Vitaf, talk about kids. So if you're talking about any woman, so the Pasha says, okay. So it's saying any woman, any mature woman who has slept with a male, Yodat Ish L'Mishkav Zachar, get rid of her. Okay, mashba, but if we know for a fact she never slept with any male, so then we would be able to keep her, no matter what age. That's mashma. Also, A, ha'eno yodat kaimu, that if she never had any sexual connections, then we can keep her. And B, it follows also that when we were talking about the taf, who are not the nashim, so you're talking about the kids, it doesn't matter. Even if they would have been having sex, it doesn't matter. Bein yadu, bein lo yadu, you're allowed to keep them. That's what one pasuk says. Okay, now look at this next pasuk, because that's the opposite. It says, V'chol hataf banashim, asher lo yadu'u mishkav zachar achayu lachem. The children that had never had sex, you're allowed to keep. Understand, you said before that even the older women, you would be allowed to keep. So make up your mind. Is there, you also said the opposite. You said children, even if they had been involved sexually, you're allowed to keep. So how do we explain this? Beautiful, says Ravuna. It's clear that the pasuk is saying not the actuality of sex, But rather, yodat means, and this is an amazing insight of Ravuna, yodat means potential, sexual potential. Amazing. So it's sexual awareness. How are we measuring sexual awareness? By genitals? Again, sounds insane. And again, it's totally consistent with the way that the Torah sees it. The psychosexual connection to the physicality is absolute. And therefore, the development of genitals means that she is yodat. She knows about sex. That's absolutely astounding. So then, if that's the case, the way that the pasuk works out is very simple. The definition of an isha is old enough to have sex. So she's three. She's an isha. The definition of taf is that she's not old enough. And the concept of yodat has nothing to do with the fact of having had such relationships. It has to do with the awareness of the potential of such relationships. Astounding. And therefore, we see clearly that when the Torah was talking about taf, shelo yadu mishkav zachar, it means that they weren't ro'ui for mishkav zachar. So they were less than 3 years old. Here is the makor for our understanding of the entire interrelationship. Tanya nami hachi, there's a bright that it speaks out what Ravuna said. V'chol isha yoda'at ish only means beru'uyali ba'el. Doesn't mean she actually had relations. It means that she is suitable for relations. Well, I mean, how do you know that? Ata Omer says the bright, you say that. I mean, that is a heck of a fetish. Maybe it means what it says. O'ena ela nivala mamash. Ah, but then when the Torah says v'chol atapin hashim asher lo yadu, and it says over here that we're talking about children, which implies that if she's not a child but she's an adult, that you would not be able to keep her. How do you explain that contradiction? Ave Omer, that the meaning of the word yodat is the potential. Beru uyali ba'el akatuv medaber. How in the world did we know? Well, we have a bunch of gynecologists over there. I mean, what in the world? How would we figure out whether a woman was ru'uyali ba'el or not? So what would that mean? Well, we had the tzitz on the Kohen Gadol, and sex makes your face blanch, unless it's the kedusha of sex. So therefore, kol shepanel morikot, remember, as we're going to see, the simen for low-class sexual behavior is hadrokan. So hadrokan is a complete type of whitening and getting swelled up and so on. Some compare it to dropsy, whatever. It's not clear what the hadrokan is, but it certainly has to do with blanching. So any woman who's panel morikot, so if she suddenly looked like she's got hepatitis, then biyadua shuri iru yali ba'el. There is your raya. And because we use the tzitz of the kohen kosher in panem orikot biyadua she'en ru'uyali ba'el and Amar Reb Nachman, yes, that's what we say. Remember, we say that hadrokan is a symbol of avera. Avera always means sexual avera. So this is a symbol of avera. So we use the tzitz. Now we had another time that we had to figure out whether girls were betulot or not, and that was the story of Pelegesh Begiva. So by Pelegesh Begiva, all of the people in Yoshvei Gilad, they never came to fight against Binyamin with the other Shvatim, and they violated the national commitment to kill anybody who wasn't part of that effort. Then it turned out, remember, that Binyamin didn't have any women. We were going to lose the whole reproductive power of Binyamin. It would have been the end of Shevet Binyamin. Everybody got together. What the heck are we going to do? And so, okay, they came up with one plan, which is, you know, the old Gilbert and Sullivan, the orphans, you know, so, okay, who grabs the girl? That's the other thing. And then when there weren't enough grabbing girls to go around, they figured, we'll find if there's any girls left in Yoshvei Gilad that were betulot, so then we'll give them to the children of Binyamin. How would they know that those girls are betulot? So it says over there, Vayimtzu mi Yoshvei Yavesh Gilad, arba me'ot na'ara betula shelo yada ish l'mishkav zachar. Now there it's talking about not the age, it's talking about the fact. So how would they know who it was that had ever had relations with a man and who is in a betula and who isn't? Omar of Ghana, well, they had an amazing idea over there. The amazing idea is that all they need to do is to expose the bloodstream to chemicals through the vagina. And that would mean that if those chemicals are picked up in the bloodstream, we can easily detect them by sniffing it in our breath, right? So what did they do? They took these powerful wine, barrels of wine, stuck the woman onto the top of the barrel where she sat there until there would be enough time for the chemical of the wines, which are very pungent, and then we would have smelled it in her breath, because obviously if that smell will get into the vagina, the whole area is lined with blood vessels that would have picked up those chemicals, and now we would have detected it in her breath. Very beautiful, sophisticated way of figuring it out. If there was a non-free flow, then that would be the air is not penetrating because she is a bitula. So then she wouldn't smell like wine. So wine, women, and song. There you go. So basically, we now know who it is that is a bitula for Yeshua Begilad. So bu'ula recha nodev. So if she was penetrated, then we could smell it on her breath. Bitula ain't recha nodev. Why don't we just use the tzitz? I mean, this seems to be a little bit more effective. I mean, we're going to use the tzitz for Barot Binyan. Couldn't we use the tzitz for these girls? Omer of Ghana, Berei, the Rav Nasan, Liratzon Lahem, K'tiv. The tzitz is supposed to be on the Kohen Gadol's head in order to be mechaper on them, and it's good for them. It's to make them wanted by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Liratzon Lahem. And so because of that, it's only l'ratzon. V'lo l'puranut, you can't use it to get them into trouble for everything. We're going to use it to prove that they should be killed. That's horrifying. No, we'd never do such a thing. Well, you did for Midian, asked the Gemara, Yochi Midianami. I mean, so how did you do such a thing for Benos Midian? Excuse me, Sir Zavashi. It says l'ratzon lahem. We're sitting over here to be nice to everybody. That sits us to be good to Bnei Yisrael. Lahem l'ratzon v'lo l'puranut. Masha ain't came when it comes to Odeko Chavim, yevia filu puranut.
Rebbe, just for the record, Rebbe usually teaches us that first they checked, and then they got Yavish Gilad, and then they came to Shiloh to do the 200 that were left.
Yes, the order. Yes, you're right, you're right. Lodak. Okay. Thank you for being so sweet instead of attacking me over the head. Omer of Yaakov Baridi, Omer of Yeshua ben Levi, we paskin like Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, and a kohen is allowed to marry a gioret as long as she was less than 3 years old. So Rabbi Zera said to Rabbi Yaakov Baridi, did you hear that directly from Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, or did you figure out from something that he said that he holds that the halacha scripture bar Yochai? O michalola shmi halacha was just by implication. Well, what would Rabbi Zera have been talking about? I mean, obviously he's got something in mind. He doesn't ask a question like that unless there's good reason for it. Well, I'll tell you, yes, actually, I do have my suspicions. Because Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said something that could have been construed as holding like Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. He said, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, there was this big city in Eretz Yisrael, and people were kora alea arar. People were saying there's something wrong with the yichus of this town, and you know, don't take girls from there or whatever. And all of that was came to Besdin, and Rebbe sent Rebbe Ruminus to check out these rumors to see whether there was any problem there. And he found a bat gioret that had married a kohen. This whole town was kohanim. And they had all come from this girl who was less than 3 years old when she was mitgayeret. She was married to a kohen. And all of these people in the town had originally come from her. And Rebbe said, okay, all right, that's fine. That's fine. No problem over here. Okay, so you see that, Rebbe. But what happened is that basically Rebbe Yeshua ben Levi is reporting that Rebbe held and paskin like Rebbe Shimon bar Yochai. Okay, so then maybe that's what you were relying on when you said that. So Rebbe Zera said, well, I mean, it happens to be I heard it exactly in those words. Halacha Rebbe Shimon bar Yochai. Okay? Not that I understand what difference it would mean if this is what, but when I say he said halacha Rebbe Shimon bar Yochai, I mean it. I didn't imply for something that he said. So this is Gemara. Well, what do you care? I mean, it is the same thing. What do you, Rebbe Zera, what are you getting so hung up on? Whether he knew it directly or whether it's Michlola, it boils down to the same thing. No, it doesn't. Because maybe it's different over there, says Rabbi Zera. Because over there, since they had already gotten married and they were all in the town and everything, maybe it's different once you get married. Because remember that Rav and Rabbi Yochanan both say that a Bogeret and a Mukase, it's a Kohen Gadol, is not allowed to marry. But if he did marry, he remains married. That's what we said yesterday. So that's why it's very important to know the difference. Excuse me? Absolutely meaningless. The reason that over there we say they can remain married is, of course, because of the Sfara, remember? So far, Liot Bogeret Dachtar. Anyway, she's going to be growing up with him. We never mean that these things are permanent, by definition. But what does that have to do with over here? If she's a Zona, what are you going to tell me? So far, Liot here? So far, Liot Zona Dachtar? That's insane. So therefore, even if you had learned it out from the inference of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, it would have been exactly as meaningful. And therefore, there would have been no problem. Okay, Rabotai, I thought I was going to make it. Sorry, we made the daf, but I thought we were going to get all the way up to the end of the sugya here. All right, Richie, stay tuned for tomorrow. What's your problem, Reb Liquid Squall?
One more line?
I'm happy to keep going, you know, as long as you don't come down on my head, I'm happy to keep going. Rav Safra actually, he heard that Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi had only said what Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi paskened only by implication because of the story. Because of that, he was bothered by it. Vikashale, he said, how can you bring a raya from there? And he answered it in exactly this way. And there was a certain Kohen who went ahead and would rely on Reb Shabbat Yochai, and he married a Giyoret who was less than 3 years old. And Reb Nachum Bar Yitzchak says, what the heck are you doing? How are you a Kohen? How'd you go marry a Giyoret? Oh, Male, what do you mean? Reb Yaakov Bar Idi quoted Reb Yehoshua ben Levi that the halachas like Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. I mean, that's pretty good background I got over here. What's your problem? Why should I not be able to marry her? Oh, Male, said Reb Nachum Bar Yitzchak, look, before we discuss this, here's what I'm giving you, a little bit of a chance. You go ahead and give her a divorce in the next 10 minutes. If not, I'm going to grab Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi out of your ears if I have to stick in a forceps and drag it out, meaning I'll put you into cherem and you're going to forget all about these lovely things that you heard. And in fact, the idea over here is that we do not paskin like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, halacha lemaisa, and is he still letting me go on? Looks like he's still letting me go on. That's wonderful. Because there was another amazing thing that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said, which had nothing to do with this sugya, but it was a beautiful, beautiful chiddush. And it has everything to do with Tumas Meis and all of the dinim in Emor. So it's kedai to have it before Shabbos, of course. Okay, so another thing that Rabbi Shimon said is a big, big chiddush. V'chanaya Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai Omer, Kivrei Akum Ein Metame Bo'o. A goy's kever is not metame in Oel Hames. How do I know? Because it says in the pasuk in Yecheskel, "Va'atein tzoni tzon marizi adamatem." You are my sheep of my own pasture. You are human. I mean, you are human. Yes, you are the only people I see as human. Atem kruyim adam. All of these other bipeds over here are not human in my eyes. Eino of dekochavim kruyim adam. This is human. They're going around and going to church. That's called human. It's a kind of cuckoo religious animal. Fine. Homus religiosus. Not my kind of human. May say, but wait a minute. When we were talking about the very milchama of Midian that we just talked about, when we talked about the spoils, it said, v'nefesh adam, human lives, 16,000. Now, obviously, we're calling them humans. Why did we call them humans? Says, well, come on. Because over there, we were listing the animals. We have to say humans in the context of animals. So we talked about there were these many sheep, and there were these many bovines, and there were these many humans. Well, obviously, in that context, there's humans and bovines and so on and so forth. Okay, fine. Well, what about the pasuk about Nineveh? It says over there, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers Yonah, what are you being so harsh about? Yesh bar be'mishtem esrei ribu adam. There's 120,000 humans there. Asher lo yada ben yamino lismolo. They don't know what the heck they're doing. What do you want to wipe them out for? They're just like, you know, primitive humans. But they're called humans. Why are they called humans? They were all over the cacophony. Because over there, the pasuk ends with the words, Ubehema Rabbah. That's, in fact, the Adam Ubehema, the Shia Hashem refers to that. Therefore, you see that as Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is still consistent. But wait, when they came back from fighting in Midian, Benot Midian, so it's Moshe said over there, anybody who killed someone, Kol Horeg Nefesh, so you're supposed to go and make yourself tahor. So apparently, if you killed one of the Midianites, you would be tamei. How could you be tamei? According to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, that's not a human. Only humans are metame, right? Well, maybe one of the Jews got killed in the fighting, and someone went to carry him away or whatever. Maybe that's what it means. No, it can't. It actually can't mean that, because the Rabbanan, they say, it says, lo nifkad bimenu ish. Nobody was hurt. So if nobody was hurt, how could they have carried away a casualty of the fighting? When Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, how does he, when he says, lo nifkad bimenu ish, he says, lo nifkad bimenu ish. Might have been casualties in the fighting, but lo nifkad bimenu ish means nobody got seduced by any of those girls. That's what it means. They didn't get any of us. They might have shot us, but they didn't kill us. So that's the point. The Lord, if God be menu ish, meaning to do an avera. Ravina says, well, what's the matter with you? Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai never said that the body of an akum is not metame. He said an akum is not metame in the ohel. That's because it says by ohel, Adam ki amut ba'ohel. But in the other dinim of Tumah, it never mentions Adam. It says Oba Kever, Oba Etzeb, it never says Adam. So what makes you think that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was being Mamayat Adam from all of Tumas Meis? He was only saying that this expanded idea of a Tumas Ohel, Dechtiv Adam ki amut ba'ohel. But Maga? Masa? Where does it mention Adam? Over there again, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is made that if you touch the body of a guy, or you carry the touch of a body of a guy over there, maybe we don't have to say anybody died in that war on our side. And that, QED,